Jackson, W266, DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Four American citizens were kidnapped in Mexico Friday, and their condition is not currently known. CBS's Christian Benavides has more.
The FBI says the Americans entered Mexico driving a white minivan with North Carolina license plates. Shortly after crossing the border, gunmen opened fire on the passengers in the vehicle.
Personas de Estados Unidos.
Mexico's president addressed the incident, saying the Americans were there to buy medicine and ended up in the crossfire between two groups. This part of Mexico is under a level 4 do not travel advisory, the State Department's highest warning level.
The FBI is offering a $50,000 reward to secure the safe release of the American citizens. A second person has died and 8 injured after being caught in a crowd push for the doors at a Rochester, New York concert late last night. There had been reports that shots had been fired, but police say they have found no evidence of that. Rochester Mayor Malik Evans says of others who want to come to their city to perform,
if the health and safety cannot be guaranteed, you will not be having a show in this city.
In Northern California, residents in Truckee are dealing with more snow. Some say they're dealing with 6 to 7 foot walls of snow outside their houses. Resident Lauren Tapia.
A lot of snow, a lot of snow management, a lot of just being stuck at home, being stuck in Truckee, like we can't leave.
And forecasters say up to several more feet will pile up through midweek. Yet another whale washes up in the Northeast, one of more than a dozen in recent months. CBS's Matt Piper reports.
The most recent whale washed up along the Jersey shore. It is the 14th dead whale to wash ashore along the New Jersey or Long Island, New York coasts since December. Seaside Park Borough Administrator Karen Kroon.
Whales washing up on the Jersey shore are not new. Mm-hmm. What's new is the frequency of this happening right now.
A necropsy on this whale revealed internal and external injuries like from a ship strike. Matt Piper, CBS News.
Weight Watchers is buying Sequence, a digital health company. As first reported by the Wall Street Journal, it's a move into the market for obesity and diabetes drugs, including Ozempic. Weight Watchers CEO Sasima Sistani.
This is about addressing a chronic condition in the same way that one might think about high cholesterol or hypertension. Yes, you need to make lifestyle changes, but in some cases, lifestyle changes alone are not enough.
Archaeologists in Egypt unearth a Sphinx-like Roman-era statue. On Wall Street, the Dow closed up 40 points, the Nasdaq fell 13 points, and the S&P 500 closed up 3 points. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate Dan Kelly once said abortion promotes sexual promiscuity and that government assistance is stealing. The Journal Sentinel found a number of Kelly's assertions in a blog called Hang Together. Kelly was a contributor between 2012 and 2015. The campaign spokesman says Kelly's views are his own and he can set them aside when deciding cases. The race for Supreme Court is the most expensive in U.S. history at close to $19 million and counting. That's money raised by the campaigns themselves and outside groups.
It's the world that we live in, quite frankly. Ever since the Citizens United case, you know, was decided by the United States Supreme Court, you know, outside money can come into these races.
Janet Protasiewicz on Capital City Sunday. Dan Kelly says money helps get candidates' messages out. In sports, the Badgers beat Minnesota last night. The Bucks beat Washington. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
This is Rocker, and I bet you didn't know I was a realtor. Come down to my open house tailgate party, 8 to 10 Saturday and Sunday mornings in March at Weikert Realtors Lake Point. Enjoy donuts from Zippy Lube and coffee from Ford Craft and Coffee, and let's talk strategy before you head into battle. Find your glory, create a battle plan. Enjoy coffee and donuts every Saturday and Sunday morning in March at Weikert Realtors Lake Point, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find us on Facebook or weikert-lakepoint.com.
The Devil's Advocates.
Aaron Mostovsky, who rioted at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, was dressed as Captain Caveman. QAnon shaman meets law and order?
Right. I mean, he pulled it off a whole lot better than Aaron Mostovsky.
Well, let me read a quote from the judge in this case. I hope you'll leave some of this fantasy world behind. Mostovsky was sentenced to 8 months in prison.
Looking at the guy, he might be one who loses his mattress on the first day.
Breaking news.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
The Shah 101 FM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shah 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
CEO's telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the Texas Education Agency, that's what it's called. It's the Teachers Vacancy Task Force. So the Texas Education Agency's Teacher Vacancy Task Force. They've spent a year studying how to address the teacher vacancy crisis that's going on, not just in Texas, but across the country. And they came out with some interesting idea. Increase pay. Gee, who'd have thought? Increase pay, improve benefits, enhance teachers' prep time, and respect teachers' time. Who would have known that those simple little things might bring new teachers in? Interestingly enough, the one thing that's not on there anywhere near being spoken about, and I know, shocker of shockers, nothing about merit pay. Who would have known? Here to share some thoughts on this Texas Education Agency's task force report, I've asked Zeph Capo to come talk with us. He's the president of the Texas Federation, American Federation of Teachers in Texas. The people who represent the good folks who have been saying for years, you know, better pay might help, better benefits, respecting us, all that stuff might make us want to stay. Who would have known? Zeph, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, Rick. Glad to be on here. Thanks for having me to talk about this important topic.
So shocking. Better pay, better benefits, better treatment. Wages, hours, conditions. I've heard that somewhere before. Where could that be?
Gee, I wonder. Any good union teacher or working person could have probably written good parts of this report. That's for sure.
But the thing that gets me is, you know, all of the right-wing talking points, you know, don't seem to be in here. All of the policy stuff that Texas has kind of been a leader in pushing towards, not really in here. So I guess the question I have, this Texas Education Agency, one, who are they? Did they come from a different planet? And is there any possibility that anyone's going to listen to this task force report?
Well, Rick, that's a really good question, and there's definitely a few things to unpack in this process for sure. So the TEA is our statewide agency, and it is governed by a commissioner who is appointed by our governor, Greg Abbott. So what may not shock you is the when this report came out and was finally released by the TEA, it was released on Friday evening. Now, most people know that when you really want to bury something in the media, you release it on Friday after most people go home. So it gets as little attention as possible. But of course, we were on the lookout for that report and made sure that everyone in the media was well aware of it. And you bring up a really good point. I do not think this was exactly the type of report that they were looking for when the agency brought this together. And for your listeners out there that don't know, when this commission was first called for by the governor, the first set of participants that were released, almost every single participant save one was an administrator. There were no actual teachers on the teacher vacancy task force when it was first
constituted. Why would you ask a teacher why they left?
Yeah, exactly. That might be too simple of an answer. So the first thing we had to do was really fight hard to make sure that teacher voices were actually on the committee itself to actually inform them what really is going to matter to keep teachers in the classroom. So that was fight number one, was getting an equal number of teachers appointed to the committee who could actually talk about our profession, talk about what their needs are, talk about what really mattered the most, and hopes that some of that actually found its way into a document that we hope the legislature will actually pay attention to.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing for me is, you know, I've been talking to teachers for, you know, almost the entire 18 years I've been doing this show, because they're an important part of our society. We entrust them with the most important resource we have in this country, which is our children. The future of this country is dependent on having good quality teachers who want to be there. And these last couple of years, I got to tell you, you know, my daughter came to me a while ago, said she'd like to be a teacher. And I cringed. I'm like, no, anything, not that, because of the treatment I see coming from the Greg Abbotts of the world. So it was shocking to me to see a task force that he called for saying better wages, hours, conditions, and none of the right wing attack points, calling teachers, you know, predators and indoctrinating children and all the crap that we see every day.
Yeah. Well, and it really is a testament to, like, you know, I do somewhat tongue-in-cheek talk about the fact that teachers weren't on the report, but many of the administrators that were initially included on that report are not the type of people that would generally participate in that type of political rhetoric that we've seen, frankly, lambasting our public schools for so long here in Texas. Because at least the one thing that we do agree on, the administrators and the teachers on the committee, is we believe in public schools. We believe in strengthening the supports for democracy that our students need to be able to become productive citizens. And so we definitely expected not to see that type of rhetoric in this report. We did expect to see more around merit pay, but the devil is in the details. There's certainly a few lines in what they refer to as strategic compensation that certainly could allow for some of those old games to come forward with, you know, a philosophy that really hasn't worked. If it's really done and developed by teachers and school employees, then there's a way to make some of those pieces palatable and actually supportive. If you're using those types of dollars to reward your master teachers and not only provide them the money, but the actual time to be able to spend with our novice teachers, our new teachers in the classroom that really need support from master teachers, that really need to be able to work one-on-one in an apprenticeship type of model to be able to gain supports from practitioners. It's one thing to learn theory in the classroom, even though most of our new teachers are not getting much of that these days. It's a whole other thing to learn the practical on the ground chops of what it takes to lead a classroom today.
Now, what you said there is the direct opposite of what we hear from a lot of my right-wing friends who seem to believe that anyone can be a teacher. You throw anyone up there and anyone can do it. It's like factory work, Zeph. Anyway, we're just stamping out little widgets. And look, I got three kids. I can't keep them in line. I don't know how you keep 30 in line. It takes real skill and training. But we've been told through a lot of media sources and a lot of right-wing politicians that, you know, you're just doing factory work. It's not all that hard.
Well, I challenge any one of those that have that mentality. Don't come just to be a teacher and walk in my shoes. I dare you to come be a substitute for one day and let's see if you can make it through.
Yeah, I think about some of the substitutes we tortured over the years. You're absolutely right. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Zeph Capo. He's the president of the Texas American Federation of Teachers. You can check out their website, texasaft.org. They've also got a campaign going on, respect.texasaft.org. We'll get links out on their campaign. Tell me about this campaign you got going on. Respect us, expect us. What are you guys doing?
Yeah, this has really been a year-long strategic campaign that has engaged our members from across the state, our locals from corner to corner. We actually started off in January of this year. I did a press conference from New York City where I happened to be at a conference when we released our report showing that 65% of our members had indicated that they were planning on leaving the classroom. That really set the tone for the level of teacher crisis that we were in. So we've spent the last year really working through holding focus groups, talking deeply with our members, engaging them on what they want to see and changes to their classroom and their working conditions to develop not only local pay raise campaigns that we ran with each of our locals across the state through June of this year, but then pivoting from local pay raise campaigns into our school board elections to make sure that regardless of what happened, school board elections to our state officer elections, regardless, despite the fact that we didn't win the races that we wanted to win, we had candidates from both sides of the aisle, across the way, talking about pieces of our report, lifting up and sharing information that we put together regarding our profession here in Texas, and actually taking some of the ideas that we know will make a difference, pulling them into their campaign. And we're now even seeing those ripples of those agenda items coming out of the lieutenant governor's office. And he's never really been a friend of labor per se, but we actually agree with him on pay raises and want to work with them to try to figure out the right way to get these things done for our teachers.
Yeah, I mean, pay is one big thing. And a lot of the teachers I talk to say, yeah, pay is great. We'd like better wages. We'd like better benefits. Absolutely. But it's that respect component. It's that prep time. It's that, you know, getting the tools that we need. It's the job stuff. It's the conditions. A lot of the teachers that I talk to, it's the conditions that are driving a lot of the demand for change. And the reason people are frustrated and leaving is this feeling that they've lost the ability to be the teachers that they want to be and can be. And it's, as I to use what I said earlier, being forced towards factory work.
That's exactly right. I mean, several of the things that would matter most to our teachers and keep them in the classroom, frankly, wouldn't cost us a dime. They literally are the dignity and respect that any worker should have in any workplace across this country. There's things like actually treating them like professionals, listening to them when they're talking about what the analysis is and what they need to help move kids forward. Actually paying them the proper living wage, treating them like professionals so that they actually have a work schedule that they can count on day after day and week after week. Those are simple things that the state could do, simple things that each local school district could do to make sure that teachers know when they have to be at work, what their schedules are going to look like. They can focus on making sure there's supports in the classroom so that we don't have kids hanging off the rafters. They literally have classrooms across this country, and particularly in Texas, where kids don't even have enough desks. They've got so many of them in the room. Those are the types of things that need to change. And in a state like Texas, where we have the ninth largest economy in the world, you would think that we would be able to at least meet the national average when it comes to per pupil funding and teacher salaries across this country.
One would think. I mean, I know, shocking. But here's the thing. And there's this push going on, and I'm sure you know this as well as anywhere. There's this push by the right to, you know, privatize public education, vouchers and all kinds of schemes that they've come up with to destroy public education. Do you think this report and the work that you're doing can maybe be a push in the other direction? Because, look, most people I know, they want a good quality public school in their neighborhood. They want a well-funded school with the best teachers possible, with the best resources, the best opportunities for their kids. This idea that we're going to have competing differences, too convoluted, too expensive. I say we should have one system that works really well, that's really well-funded. Do you see this as an opportunity?
We certainly do. We certainly take the privatization threats very seriously. They are certainly a potential pitfall to achieving our agenda, which is truly fully funded school and teachers that are respected, school employees that are respected. It's not just teachers. Our bus drivers and cafeteria workers and others are in the same boat. This privatization agenda is really a red herring. It's something they've been trying to pass for a long time. And frankly, parents and voters and community members on both the left and the right have said no for years and years. And I expect them to continue to say no, because the fact of the matter is more than 95% of all of our kids in the state of Texas attend a public school. Parents want their neighborhood schools to be strong places where they want to send their kids and the kids want to go. That's what we need to focus on. And particularly in our rural communities, our schools are the heart of the neighborhood. We hear a lot of things about Friday Night Lights here in Texas, but there really is a phenomenon around that is part of our values and part of what we truly believe in as Texans. And frankly, it's one of the things that I've said as well too. It's places where kids actually earn the scholarship monies and the opportunities to go on to college, because many of them are in the same boat I was, wouldn't have been able to afford to go to college without financial aid, without some other way to make it forward, because we were working class families. And so I think that what we're pushing forward with our respect agenda and the work that we're doing with allies from the community, from the parent ranks, and from the public school supporting groups will take this opportunity to once again fight back the privatization of our schools through vouchers. They are coming strong, though. There's no doubt about it. We have had quite a few AstroTurf groups propped up by dark money from across the country, because they saw this opportunity after the pandemic, where everyone was upset. Teachers weren't happy. Parents weren't happy. Nobody was, and nobody liked the circumstances that we were put under. But they see this as an opportunity to do this, and they're coming strong, because I really do think it's pass it now or pass it never in Texas.
No, you're right. Never let a good crisis go to waste, and they are not, because we're seeing it all across the country. So last thing I want to throw out. All the time we see attacks on teachers. We see, calling names. And tell me something good about a teacher. Let's leave on a high note. I think about all the teachers that I had and wonderful experiences, some not so great. But, you know, I had a lot of really great people who influenced who I am. Leave me something positive.
Well, our teachers are amazing people. The things that I've seen them turn around, the things that I've seen them do that they're working on right now, the innovative pieces around our career and technology education programs in the state of Texas, the things that they're doing with young kids and coding across the country. Actually, one of the stories that gave me the most joy was in my local co-op electricity magazine the other day, where they weren't even a public education grounded group, and they were doing a middle of the document spread on all of the career and tech programs highlighting all of our high schools in Central Texas and the teachers that were helping kids actually get into high-wage, high-skilled jobs and industries straight out of high school. The number of certificates and job skill training pieces that kids can literally walk away from high school and walk into $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year jobs, frankly, is mind-boggling and amazing, and something that I didn't even think was available when I was in high school. So there are opportunities out there. Public schools are doing great things for kids. We all need to work together to make sure everybody has those same opportunities.
Great stuff. Zeph, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Keep up the great work.
Thanks, Rick.
I appreciate it. Good stuff. Zeph Capo, he is the president of the Texas American Federation of Teachers, TexasAFT.org, the website. Also, check out their campaign hub, respect.texasaft.org. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I love this story. Evidently, Elon Musk doesn't even go to the bathroom without bodyguards. Evidently, everywhere he goes, he's got two, quote, bulky bodyguards following him wherever he goes in the Twitter building, according to one Twitter engineer. And look, can you imagine? Not many people thrilled with him in the Twitter sphere. And I'm not talking about the users. I'm talking about the people who work there. You know, and I love the framing that's come out of this. You know, there are people who, you know, they don't think people really want to work. No, people don't want to have their entire lives nothing but work. You may find a couple that their existence is and their entire identity is tied up in what they do, but they are far and few between. Most people work so that they can live. They don't live to work. And what Musk, you know, said, you know, we're going to have, you know, people who are, you know, this is it. This is your existence. And you see pictures of people sleeping on the floor at their desks. Yeah, I guess he's built them little sleeping quarters, I guess, somewhere where if they need to get a quick nap, they can do and then get back to work. You know, kind of like the sweatshops. Only not as dirty, I guess. Now, this is one of these things that I look at, and I look at someone like Musk, who is losing it. As people get more secluded, as people self-isolate, like he is doing, because he doesn't trust any of the people that work for him, evidently. He doesn't trust any of the people that are there, because at this point, you know, this far down the road, people are burning out. You can only do three or four people's jobs for so long until, I don't know, the spouse starts getting angry, the kids start going, where's mommy or daddy? And then the pressure and the stress starts building, and then they start turning on you. this sign here makes me go, how much further, how crazier is he going to get? Because again, when you isolate people and you don't hear what's going on, it gets worse and worse. Remember, he fired the engineer because his impressions went down. So people were deliberately not looking.
The Sha 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. After the kidnapping of four U.S. citizens in Mexico just across the border from Brownsville, Texas, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says,
"We stand ready to provide all appropriate consular assistance. U.S. law enforcement is in touch with Mexican law enforcement. The Departments of State and Homeland Security are also coordinating with Mexican authorities."
A second person has died after a crowd crush at a rap concert in Rochester, New York last night. Police Chief David Smith.
As people began to exit, the crowd began to surge and rush toward the exit. There are some reports that shots were heard, causing the crowd to panic, but that has not been confirmed.
Weight Watchers is buying telehealth platform Sequence, moving into the obesity drug business. New York University food and nutrition professor Dr. Marion Nessel.
Well, Weight Watchers has given up, is what it looks like to me. They've just said, okay, we're not getting the kind of results that people want from us. Let's try this.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Sha 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. A federal judge has ruled a now-closed Wisconsin Substance Abuse Center and its CEO owe the state and federal government over $2 million in a case of Medicaid fraud. The U.S. Department of Justice sued the Healing Center and Dr. Siamak Arasi in 2019 for allegedly ordering prescriptions for an anti-addiction drug in the names of former patients and then billing Medicaid for reimbursements. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reports Arasi allegedly stockpiled the drugs and then sold them to patients for $1,000 a month. Flu cases sharply up this year. So far, over 50,000 people in Wisconsin have tested positive for the flu, 39,000 more cases than the total last year. Health officials hoping we already saw the peak in December. Cases have slowed since then, but there's no guarantee we won't see another surge before the flu season is done. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
The Civic Media team would like to say congratulations. More than 200 Wisconsin businesses and nonprofits are receiving a free advertising campaign through our one-day $1 million advertising giveaway. If you missed out, our local sales team would still love to help you with your own campaign. Go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. Again, civicmedia.us and sponsorship. New and still growing. Advertise today with a Civic Media network of radio stations.
This is Hammer, mortgage originator with Provisor. Get your financing game on before you jump into the open house market. Join me at Weichert Realtors Lake Point, 8 to 10 every Saturday and Sunday morning in March. Enjoy donuts from Zippy Lube, coffee from Forward Craft and Coffee, and let's talk financing strategy. It's an open house tailgate party at Weichert Lake Point, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Visit MadisonOpenHouse.com for more info. Provisor Inc., NMLS ID 1802853, Equal Housing Lender.
Hey, Wisconsin. Voting is one of our fundamental rights. Every eligible citizen has the right to be heard. You need an acceptable photo ID to vote in the spring election on April 4th. Vote Riders provides free help to get your Wisconsin ID card. Please visit voteriders.org today. They can answer all your questions about voter ID and offer free help if you need an ID to vote. If you're a citizen and you need an ID, visit voteriders.org. Voteriders.org.
Here's today's STEM tip. Don't throw out that old plastic bottle. Repurpose it by turning it into an awesome terrarium. Just fill it with sand, pebbles, soil, and your favorite plant. It'll grow sealed right in its own ecosystem. Learn more at SheCanSTEM. A message from the Ad Council.
It's about protecting freedom. The clothing mandate, she explained, eliminates the possibility that the state will be the clothing police. This is Jim Hightower saying, I'm thinking of moving to Missouri. It must be wonderful to live in a state where the government has already fixed all the big problems people really care about, letting the legislative body focus on properly clothing its women members.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So a little fun out of Texas. State Representative Brian Slayton. He's introduced a bill that would place a referendum on the Texas ballot in 2024 for secession. And look, you know, there's part of me that goes, I don't know. I'm this national divorce thing, this secession thing, this craze. There's part of me that goes, maybe we should put it up for a vote. You know, I don't know. You know, but mandate everyone has to vote, everyone, and then from there we put it to bed. Just a thought. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day. Maybe a peek into secession. Our good friend, former Ohio Congressman and political analyst Bob Nay. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So where are you on the secession idea? I mean, there's been a lot of talk about national divorce, secession. Oregon, they want their little piece to be splintered off. Should we be redesigning states and going through all that nonsense?
I mean, it's okay to put the bill out there, and then I'd like to see a vote on the bill.
Yeah, kind of what?
Literally, throw it out there, put it up for a vote, because the bill will never come to a vote. And just see who goes on record to have succession, you know? But this is kind of comparable to, and this happens with Democrats and Republicans, where, you know, if Trump gets elected, I'm moving. If, you know, Biden gets elected, I'm moving out of the country. None of them ever move.
Yeah, goodbye. My stance has always been goodbye. I don't care which side you're on. I'm not leaving. I'm going
to
stand and fight.
So, you know, the succession thing, I'd actually like to kind of see everybody's eyes when they throw it out there for a vote and see what people have to do. And that would end the bill real fast.
Yeah, I mean, start talking about what that would really look like, what a detangling of this country would look like, especially for red states who take more money from the federal government than blue states. Okay, you can't be a welfare state anymore. How are you going to make that up? And look, you know, blue states, you know, where are you going to get a good portion of your food? I mean, there's a lot of conversations that, you know, maybe for the exercise, maybe we'll stop hating each other for 5 minutes and start maybe figuring things out.
Also, wouldn't you need a visa to travel?
Well, you should need a visa to go into West Virginia or Mississippi anyway.
Picking on poor West Virginia.
Or to get out. That's mean of me, and I don't. I spent a lifetime 1 year in West Virginia.
I was born in Wheeling, so.
Yeah, I spent a year in Fairmont, so that was fun and entertaining.
There you go. Yeah, well, I spent a year in Morgantown.
Yeah, I know.
Correctional. So I said I won't be buried in West Virginia. You know, I was born and incarcerated there. I won't be buried there, though.
We went to
Ohio.
We went to a state prison outside of Moundsville. I don't think it's still in.
Yeah, it's a tourist thing, you know, like kind of the haunted prison.
Yeah, we went to there.
It's there.
We went there, and there was a little riot going on when we were there.
Mm-hmm. Of course, it closed a while back, but it's now like a tourist thing.
Yeah, now this was a while back when I went there, when we visited on a college trip. It was a long time ago. But, yeah, I remember that. And I remember going, nope, not for me. Thanks anyway.
Right.
It would be interesting to see how it, again, you know, as an observer of human nature and political, you know, back and forth, it would be interesting to see how something like that would play out. Talking about interesting things playing out, Jim Jordan was all over the talk shows this weekend. He had his whistleblowers or didn't or whoever they were. I guess we're going to be subpoenaing, 16 potential FBI agents? Is that going to happen?
Well, it'll probably happen. Here's the problem he has, and this is, of course, why he was, you know, out on the shows. It's one thing, you know, for the Democratic side to say his investigation is being exposed as a sham, right? That's what they're saying. But let's look at what the Republicans are saying. The Republicans are, you know, under their breath, but it's leaking out, are increasingly disappointed because they want results, and they don't have results because nothing's been brought forth. Now, they had some whistleblowers, and I think there were three of them, but they provided very little information on it. So there's a 316-page report, It was compiled by the Democrats and dismissed the testimony, saying that nearly all the Republicans involved in the investigation, the witnesses, some of the members, are linked to a desire to basically, you know, whitewash the January 6th insurrection. And then, on top of it, the fact that there were all kinds of wild, you know, conspiracy theories, et cetera. Now, as far as weaponization, does the government participate in weaponization? It can. Is there a planned weaponization program where there's a secret cabal and meeting? You know, okay, now we're going to get so-and-so, now we're going to get the conservatives this way. No. Are there rogue elements within agencies that will take it upon themselves to go after somebody who might be conservative or somebody who might be liberal? Yes. But when you want to talk about weaponization, that's got to be a deliberate, planned thing, not one or two people, but a deliberate, planned, across the agency coalition that, like I said, has this whole secret meeting that says, here's what we're going to do now, and here's how we're going to get the conservatives. Frankly, they give the government too much credit, Rick.
Too much credit. And, you know, I said this in the beginning.
They're not, the government is not coordinated enough to basically, you know, completely in a block go after anybody, whether it be to the left or the right.
No, and the thing is I look at the whistleblowers. Don't you have to have something to say to be a whistleblower? I mean, most of them were, you know, stuff I heard. It wasn't really, they didn't have any firsthand knowledge of anything. I mean, if you're a whistleblower, right, you were involved in something, you saw it, you have some actual knowledge other than, well, I guess.
Right. And so the witnesses they had didn't have firsthand knowledge. So now he's going to bring in, I don't know who. I don't think they're going to subpoena. First of all, I don't think they have to subpoena a whistleblower. I think the whistleblower's got enough protections inherently in the law that they would come in and upon request.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he's just going to, you know, subpoena agents. And if he subpoenas agents that aren't involved in whistleblower activity, because if he's going to do something, subpoena people that were whistleblowers. Or like I said, you don't have to subpoena them. They can come in. But I don't know who he's going to particularly go after or what they're going to, you know, try to ascertain out of it.
So let me ask you this, because whistleblowers get whistleblower protection, or supposedly.
Right.
Now, we know that's all nonsense because they usually end up
getting
canned anyway. But if you did talk as, you know, confidential and then you got subpoenaed, you're a hostile witness coming in because you didn't want to be there. You're not a whistleblower. You're just being subpoenaed to testify. That doesn't seem to be that you would get whistleblower protection. I mean, basically, you're going to end up getting someone who's going to say, I don't know what you're talking about. So Jordan's kind of put himself in between a rock and a hard place, no?
Well, right. He has himself in a box. And you know, you're right. With the whistleblowers, there undoubtedly can be repercussions against them. I'm not saying that the government doesn't do some sketchy things. I'm not saying that they, you know, they don't sit there and they don't get mad at whistleblowers. They do within agencies. Of course they do. And there could be retaliation. And so if there is, then the committee should open itself up to talk to these people, at least in confidence, to see, you know, what they're feeling. But you're right. He's got himself in a particular box. And again, when you start a committee and you have to go onto national television to start to defend it before it's really underway, you've got a problem.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch how this plays out because, you know, he's made a lot of promises. There were a lot of him and Maria Bartiromo were, you know, there's a lot coming supposedly. And the thing is, and look, I'm sure you know more FBI agents than I do. Everyone that I've ever known, very straight laced, very by the book. Not very many hippie liberals. So I think the deck is stacked against what he's laying out, but we'll see. We will see.
Well, we see, and also, you know, Jim Jordan's asking for an additional $2 million a year and access to a reserve of $15 million to conduct investigations. I can tell you firsthand, you remember Congressman Burton?
Yeah.
And he undertook the Whitewater hearings. because there may be two or three different committees doing it. And I was there in a private meeting when we had to shut him down on money because he really didn't come up with anything. And I was in that meeting where we had to say no. He wanted another, I think it was $25 million. Well, you can continue to spend money, and that doesn't mean that anything will come of it. So if Jordan wants money out of the House, then they're going to have to produce something that people say, oh, yes, okay, yeah, there's something there, then we need to continue on with it. Otherwise, I can guarantee you at some point in time, somebody is going to say, no, I don't think we're going to fund it anymore.
No, at the end of the day, I think he's going to get everything he wants because, hey, Benghazi, they're hoping for another Benghazi.
Well, which went on and on and on.
Forever. We'll see where this takes us. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst. Bob, I want to get your thoughts on this. Just a couple of quick things. There was a story in the Wall Street Journal today saying that we as a country are not ready for conflict with one of the great powers. Said, look, you know, the reason we did okay in the Middle East and Afghanistan is because we have superior air power, but we don't have that kind of big advantage with China. This moment should kind of be a wake-up call to what Biden is trying to do, reshoring manufacturing, you know, bringing jobs back, you know, kind of, you know, thinking about, you know, building up a production capacity. Why isn't this getting enough play?
With the manufacturing end, and you mean in what he wants to do?
Yeah, I mean, you know, because both sides of this, the fact that we're kind of vulnerable in this moment, because we don't have the capacity to ramp up production, and I don't think people have really put that together as well as I think should be done, or am I just, you know, cheerleading for the president?
No, I mean, you're right. Look, on one hand, we have, you know, said we're going to protect Taiwan. This cuts right to the chase of China, because this is right to the heart of China.
Right.
In one hand, we've said, you know, we're going to protect Taiwan and its democracy, and, you know, we're going to expand our presence, our bases in the Philippines. I think we're going to take it up to 9 or 10. You know, and this is basically designed and by our government as a, hey, China, you better watch. You know, you better, you know, prepare to back down. And so people have said in the Congress, people of, you know, of authority on both sides of the aisle, well, you know, we're preparing for it. We better prepare for it. I think Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois said that, you know, are we ready? And he said there are four countries around the world we watch carefully, and China is one of them. We better be prepared. Now, being prepared militarily is one thing, but you raise the most significant point, because if it comes down to people, we don't have as many people as China. If it comes down to military, we have, you know, weaponry, but the preparation here at home also, you know, would it be within the American consciousness, you know, to, you know, go full force? Because a lot of times people say, yeah, go get them, and then all of a sudden, you know, things happen and the will isn't there as much. Now, our military is great, they're strong, we have good military, we have, you know, good people, but the question is, are we prepared at home? And I think if anything, Rick, and you're somebody who has been in the forefront, as I was when I was in Congress, of the whole trade deals and, you know, American jobs, make it here, create it here, and that was lost somewhere along with permanent trade status for China. When COVID happened, look what happened to us. We were missing pieces in widgets and, you know, Intel parts, and we were missing the supply chain.
Yep.
So if we want to be prepared, you're 1,000% right. You want to be prepared for anything, whatever it is, you better be prepared at home, and we better have our supply chain intact and under our control, and that means manufacturing and American-made products and American-thought-out products.
No, absolutely. But, you know, here's the thing, and this is where, you know, I still remember when we went into Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, we were having bake sales to get, you know, doors put on Humvees. We were having bake sales and fundraisers to get soldiers flak jackets. You know, we didn't have the things that they needed on the ground to fight in that environment. Can you imagine what we would need in a much larger context. And this is where, look, I'm a Teddy Roosevelt fan. You know, walk softly and carry a big stick. We don't have that big our big stick is broken.
It's tough. I mean, it's, you know, to be prepared also to go up against the, you know, the Chinese, you know, the our industrial base.
Yep.
For ages, it's working at production of peacetime levels, not wartime levels. You know, could we gear it up to do that? I mean, there are so many questions that, you know, would have to be answered. But you're right that when we went into Iraq, the soldiers were overheating, and the United States wasn't even supplying, you know, they're called like air-conditioned vests with mist. We weren't even supplying that.
No, I mean, it's something as a country we better figure out and quick. And yet, here's the thing, and this is what gets me. You said our willingness to do things for very long kind of diminishes, not the way you put it, but, you know, that was the gist of it. Because you look at what's going on in Ukraine, you know, at the beginning, a lot of people, I helped them out, and that's diminishing, especially as you have the Republican Party or a number of Republicans coming out and saying, we need to stop funding this. I look at Marjorie Trainwreck Greene calling for us to bomb Mexico, and I'm going, you know, we love war. It just, I guess it depends on what the war, what war, which is just bizarre to me, because we'd be bombing. It would be illegal to bomb Mexico, but we'd be bombing one of our number one trading partner.
Right. Yeah. But here's Marjorie Taylor Greene. She has a problem with, you know, defending the Ukraine against Putin, but she doesn't have a problem to just bomb another country that, you know, didn't do anything to us.
Yeah, it's crazy. Lastly, I want to get your thoughts on this Fox News stuff. I know you've been following this for a while. There's a phone call, evidently, that's been dropped that basically laid out what we knew all along, that, you know, Fox was, you know, was trying to game the system. They fired the guy who called the election in Nevada, which I'm expecting them, or I mean in Arizona, I'm expecting him to sue them at some point. Are you surprised by any of the stuff that's coming out of Fox News? You know, for instance, you know, Bret Baier, who evidently wanted to cave to Trump and pursue all of the fraud allegations, all because it was about the money.
Well, you know, they looked at this as, you know, Fox looked at this as, you know, beating the ratings. And now Fox is in a legal problem. I would say Fox is in a legal peril. And, of course, they're going to go opposite of what Trump wants, which is a Supreme Court decision on the media, you know, liability. But Fox saw an opportunity to, you know, jump aboard, but yet if you look at the emails internally, people were saying, whoa, wait a minute. This woman, that was the attorney, she's crazy. I mean, they were saying all kinds of things.
Yeah, Sidney
but
Paul.
Then out in the forefront, there they went. Now, they, of course, want the Supreme Court to not take up the issue of defamation. Of course, that would, you know, there, as they say, defamation would harm all the media. Right now, Fox is worried about itself, and I think it's in real jeopardy for the $1.6 billion defamation lawsuit, and that's by Dominion. I think they're in jeopardy over it, especially with the, you know, bringing out of all these emails.
Yeah, and this phone call, this phone message that came out, this phone call today, that we heard about with this Suzanne Scott, the CEO of Fox News, and this Jay Wallace, the network president. And then evidently they convened a Zoom call, and there's all of this. It looks like Rupert's setting up the fall people, and this Suzanne Scott looks like the one that's going to be the fall person. So, you know, for me, I'm looking at this going, it's looking like the fall person is coming. But we'll see how
all
it plays
right,
out. As always, Bob, appreciate the time, my friend.
Thank you.
Yeah, seriously, I think it's coming. I think the fall person is going to be this Scott woman, and because they got to save the ship, so you might have to throw a couple of the rats overboard. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm Rick Smith. And this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 2012. A few thousand artists, activists, teachers, and union members lined Broadway in New York City. Each held a pink placard representing a pink slip. As New Yorkers bustled by on their way to work, the protesters stood with their signs from 8:14 in the morning until 8:28. The organizers planned the 14-minute protest to bring attention to the then 14 million workers who were unemployed in the United States. The line stretched for nearly 3 miles. The participants also passed out pink flyers to passersby, emblazoned with the message, "The next pink slip might be yours." As the country slowly recovered from the deep recession of 2008, that March's national unemployment rate still topped 8% of the workforce. The protest organizers chose to hold their event on Super Tuesday, the day when 10 states held primaries to choose presidential candidates. The protesters asked the presidential candidates, Congress, and corporations to address the crisis of unemployment. One of the protest organizers explained the visual imagery of the event. If all 14 million jobless Americans formed a single unemployment line, it would stretch unbroken across the borders of our entire country. From Portland, Maine to Seattle, Washington to San Lucas, California to Miami, Florida, and back to Portland again. In the years that followed, the unemployment rate slowly improved. In January of 2015, the U.S. still faced a 5.7% unemployment rate. Yet millions of Americans are still without work, or are underemployed, or unable to get enough work hours to support their families.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com. Like us on Facebook and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something in your mind, email me, Rick, at TheRickSmithShow.com. So, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution had an interesting story today that probably we should be paying attention to, because what's going on evidently in the state legislature in Georgia is there's a proposal, there's some legislation introduced that might, they're calling it bringing accountability to local prosecutors. And I view it as doing what Ron DeSantis did in Florida to that Andrew Warren we had on the show a couple of times. Don't like what you're doing, so we're just going to suspend you. We're going to get rid of you. And look, the court said you got to put him back to work. You got to give him his job back. He was elected. You can't do this. It's unconstitutional. But you know where Andrew Warren is? He's still fighting to get his job back. Because laws, DeSantis, Republicans, be damned, they could care less. Care less about the rule of law. Now you go, well, why is that a big deal? Well, you look at Georgia. If Georgia were to do the same thing, this Fannie Lewis, this prosecutor in Georgia, that or Fannie Willis, this that everyone's got hope that might, after this special grand jury, might indict Trump and all of the rest of them. Because of remember the perfect phone call? You remember with Brad Raffensperger? Just find me, you know, 14,000 or 11,500 votes. Like Brad was just going to reach into the couch cushions and find a bunch of votes. That phone call alone is breaking the law. Please, guy in charge of our elections, go rig the election for me. Yeah, I'm the most powerful person in the country. I'm somebody who will campaign against you. Now, this is going to be interesting because Democrats are saying, you know, the power already exists for there to be oversights over local prosecutors. What they're accusing Republicans of doing is going even further. And that's the problem. I mean, the fact that there are no laws that Republicans believe as settled law. I mean, stop and look at Florida. Could you in your lifetime before last week imagine a government saying, if you're going to talk about us, if you're going to say anything about us, you have to register with us.
Can you imagine? I mean, a clear violation of the First Amendment. But they're still moving forward with it. Because the rule of law doesn't mean anything to these people. Power. That's what means something to them. And we have to come together. Just my thoughts.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.